You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on the 20th episode of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be casting an eye back to the defeat to Fulham and the controversial win over Wolves 2. We'll be looking at how some of United's loanees have been getting on in loan watch, and a whole fan will be joining us on the phone to preview this weekend's encounter.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome to the latest episode of the RedCafe.net podcast. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Dan and Dov join me as always. Dan, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks, Steve. Been fighting in the snow today. But apart from that, I'm fit and well. How about you? I've seen some photos on Facebook of you building snowmen, but apart from that, been busy, Thomas, have you?
Yeah, I'm all good. Been building a Thomas Cushack snowman, and as Dov just alluded to, probably better than Ben Foster in goal at the moment. But yeah, all good. Dov, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm absolutely freezing though. It is sub-zero in Scotland. That's all I'm going to say. It's so cold.
Well, hopefully warm people up with another fantastic pod. We'll start with the Fulham defeat, guys, on Saturday. Dan, depressing, wasn't it? I mean, how would you analyse that? It was, I know Craven Cottage, really, really tough place to go, but we just didn't perform, did we? All over the park as well.
No, I said in the previous podcast I thought we might get turned over. I didn't think in Moadi's, you know, nightmares that we'd get beat 3-0 down there. I watched majority of the game, and I'm not a big fan of playing three at the back, you know, especially in England against opposition like, you know, Bobby Zamora. If you got Richard De Ligt in there, and Zamora just bullied him off the park, really. It's a learning curve for Richie, so I'm sure he'll be fine. But I just think that the system didn't really work, and, you know, I think I'd have put a 4-4-2 in there, because I'm sure that's what the players, even if they're out of position, the likes of Carrick and Fletcher, they're more familiar with that position, you know, if Carrick plays centre-half and Fletcher plays right back. So I just think it was a bit of a mistake, but one that I thought had a big effect on the result. Fulham deserved to win. We didn't really do much in the attacking sense either.
I was going to say, Dov, I mean, we sort of doing a disservice to Fulham here. I mean, Fulham played really well, didn't they? I know we were off colour, but at the same time, they looked really good, didn't they?
No, they were absolutely fantastic. I think Danny Murphy, as much as it pains me, call a former Liverpool player fantastic in a game. It was brilliant. And Bobby Zamora for England. We sort of, at the moment, ridiculed him last week, but sort of made light of the fact that Roy Hodgson allegedly said that, although he denies it. We said he's not good enough for England, but he pretty much ruined Carrick, Fletcher and De Ligt all by himself. So credit to those two guys. And Damien Duff as well. He was, looks like he's back to his best. I don't know what Evra was doing. Evra had pretty much a howler against him, and obviously he scored a fantastic goal at the end as well. But we were horrendous, absolutely horrendous. It was disgusting to watch.
I was going to say, Dan, I mean, does that show that we've got some real problems at the moment, or was it just we're going through a bit of a bad patch at the moment?
We're going to go through the bad patch until we get all the players fit and healthy again. I think it's fairly easy to see that. Maybe at home we'll be fine against teams where we can keep the ball against, but away from home I think we're going to struggle. I mean, we've got Hull on, is it Sunday we play Hull, and I think we could technically struggle in that one as well. But I'm optimistic though. I think we've got the attacking power to turn it around, but Wayne Rooney needs to start stepping up again and show us what he's made of, because I thought he was particularly poor against Fulham and against Wolves, in fact, the game before that.
And Dov, I mean, Ferguson's ruled out that he wants to sort of dip into the market in January, but is he right to do that? And if you were in the managerial hot seat, I mean, would you be relying on the players coming back, the likes of Rio Ferdinand, to come back? I mean, you could list half a page of defenders that are out at the moment, but will hopefully be back in the new year. But I mean, would you be tempted to maybe bring in a centre back for a bit of extra cover? Or
I'd like to see the squad maybe get expanded a little bit, but it depends what kind of player you're going to bring in. Are you going to bring in a top-class player, to take a first team spot? Or are you going to bring in a squad player who will be happy when Ferdinand, Vidic, John O'Shea and the like come back and probably win their places back in the side? I mean, you're basically going to have a guy there for maybe a month or so. So I don't think it's the right way to go, because I think we've got, there's eight defenders out. That's two defences, pretty much. That's a lot of players. And like when you're going up against, like, Fulham are a good side, and they've got a really, really tactically savvy manager. And he would have seen this. We played three at the back as well. So I just think it is one of those games where we were outplayed through various circumstances. A better team with a manager who knows what he's doing, and the fact that we have a rubbish defence. And Paul Scholes, who was terrible. You alluded to Rooney, Dan, but I thought Scholes was worse.
Yeah, Scholes had a poor game, but I think in fairness to Scholes, I mean, the last three or four games, I think Scholes has played really well for us. He's kept the ball well and kept it ticking, but on Saturday, like you say, he was particularly poor first half. He gave the ball away three or four times. And obviously, for the Murphy goal as well, just got caught in possession, didn't even bother chasing back either. He just, like, accepted it, which was strange to see, really. But
It was after, like, Murphy scored as well. He just sort of stood there, just knew what he'd done.
Well, yeah, he knew he'd made a mistake, so fair play. But, I mean, players have bad days. But it's where you look to players like Scholes and Rooney to, you know, maybe drag the rest of the team through, use their experience and class, really. But it just didn't happen. Nothing seems to have seen up for it. I thought Anderson was average again. Owen couldn't get in the game up front, just not because he didn't want to, but, you know, the service is so poor. And that's the problem when you take arguably two of your best midfielders and put them in defence. You've no midfield. So, you know, you're back to square one, aren't you?
Well, we mentioned January just then, Dan. Yeah. Well, one player who definitely is going to be coming in, that's Mamie Diouf. He's today, I believe it was, he was granted his work permit to be able to move to us in January. Yeah, he's coming from Mold, the Norwegian side. He scored 16 goals in 29 league games for them this season. And their season's just finished, of course. So, yeah, I mean, it's a bit unknown quantity, isn't it, really? You don't know how he's going to be able to adapt to the Premier League. I mean, are you excited about his arrival? Or do you think maybe, much like Minucho, he came over, didn't he, in similar circumstances and never really got the chance to shine. And when he did, you could just tell he wasn't going to be able to cut it at the top level. But Diouf, it could be a different kettle of fish.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I've not got too high expectations of him because, like you say about Minucho, you know, he looks like he could have been a decent player, but it just turned out he was absolutely, you know, pants, really, for want of a better word. But Diouf, I mean, apparently he's got pace, he's strong, he's a good finisher, so, I don't think that he'll get a run in the team anyway. Probably play in the reserves a few times, so we'll just see how he goes on. But I'm not really that excited about him just yet anyway.
Really? I think he's going to get a chance, I must say. I think Ferguson will give him a go.
Well, first of all, Steve, he's got to start playing Berbatov more because, I mean, we've got Berbatov sitting on the bench most games now, Owen as well. So, and I think he'll pick Welbeck over Diouf up front.
Yeah, possibly. I just think we're crying out for that player with a bit of pace up top who can get in behind and really cause defenders problems. And it sounds like that's sort of what he's got in his repertoire. I expect Ferguson will give him the chance to impress. Like you say, it might be that he has to prove himself in the reserves first, but sounds like he's more than capable of doing that. So hopefully he will be given the chance. And another player we've been linked with, Dov, and reportedly made a bid for as well, that's Angel Di Maria, the Argentinian left winger. Apparently we've made a bid for him and offered Nani in exchange. What do you make of that? Do you think that is true? And do you think it's something that could come to fruition?
I think we're interested because he's a good player, and you should be interested in players that are good, and especially in a position where we're decidedly weak. I still don't want to see Nani go, but I think maybe his comments that we've spoken about before has really, that's been the final nail in the coffin for him. On Angel Di Maria, I've not seen him play too often, and a couple of times I've seen him play, and it was only for the Argentinian under, I think it was under 21 side, and they were playing in the under 21 World Cup, and he was absolutely fantastic, and he was a really, really sort of direct player, and he's not scared to take people on, pacey, and can finish as well. I think he scored the winning goal in the final, I believe. And also, I know as well that Benfica, when they bought him, they didn't like buy him outright 100%, but they've been steadily increasing the percentage of which they own the player. So they're pretty much going to sell him come the summer. Yeah, I don't think he'll come in January. I think if anything, it's going to be in the summer. I don't think Ferguson's going to spend a huge amount of money in January. I think it'll more be after the World Cup before anybody comes in. But I think he's a player I would like to see come in because it looks like he's going to be a quality player. But I still don't want to see Nani go. I want Nani to be given a proper chance. But I don't think that is going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, like you say, with Di Maria, I think it's going to be a case of the summer. And I think Benfica would prefer that. The World Cup just around the corner. If he goes to South Africa and puts on a show, his value is going to skyrocket, isn't it? So that's probably the more likely thing that's going to happen. But yeah, let's look at another game from last week before we move on. That's Tuesday's victory over Wolves at home, 3-0. Dan, a lot's been made of sort of Mick McCarthy's team selection. He's received a lot of criticism over it, but I think in hindsight it shows that he really did make the right decision for his club, especially when you consider that Wolves went on to beat Burnley on the weekend.
Well, I think that McCarthy's well within his rights to pick whoever he wants. It was disappointing though to see such a weekend team, especially when you paid your money, you know, to watch two Premier League teams. But I mean, yeah, they beat Burnley on Sunday, so you know, that's the 3 points that's more important to him. So I think fair play to him. You know, I mean, he's stuck up for himself as well in the press. He's not been bullied by it, and yeah, fair play, no problems. People like Arsene Wenger come out and they have a bit of a whinge all the time, but I'm sure he's done it before in the past. In fact, I'm certain he has. So I don't see any grounds for any complaints.
Dov, what did you make of the performance? I mean, although it was a weakened Wolves team, you've still got to beat what's put in front of you, haven't you?
Yeah, no, we played. I thought we played all right. I didn't think it was a magical performance by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought we played all right, and we did deserve to win. And I think Mick McCarthy sort of knew that his team was going to lose regardless of what happened, so that he basically saved himself, which I'm in agreement with. But like, taking on Dan's point, he's well within his rights. It actually states in Premier League rules you've got to play your strongest side in every game, and this is where the debate.
It doesn't happen all the time, does it?
I'm in agreement with you, and I think what he's done is he's within his rights to do that. But the point of contention was saying was made that it states that you've got to play your strongest team, and therefore it's not making it a fair competition for other like teams like Arsenal, who are moaning about it, saying basically they're giving away the points. But I think he's well within his rights. But I'm just saying that's another point of view.
I have to say though, Dov, I mean, I think a lot's made of it because it is Manchester United, because it is a big four team. Say, I think it was, were Birmingham playing Blackburn, I think, in midweek last week. So yeah. I imagine Blackburn had gone out and put out a reserve side because they wanted to focus on the game that they're playing on the weekend, because they wanted the 3 points more in that. I mean, would there be as much made out of that?
I think because I think, you know, 10 changes is quite excessive. You might get away with it and nobody even talk about it if you did, like, I don't know, 5 or 6. But to make 10 changes to a team, just it'll shout at the press, won't it, that he's putting a weakened team up. So I don't know, really. I think fair play. You know, who cares what the Premier League rules say, because no one sticks to them anyway. Well, look at us last year. We played, well, the reserve team against Hull, but it's been overlooked because we won the game. Now, if Wolves would have gone and beat us at Old Trafford, no one would have said anything, you know. So I just think it's a load of
swings and roundabouts, Dan. Swings and roundabouts.
Well, yeah. Why not?
Okay, well, let's move on to briefly discuss the Champions League draw, guys. Dov, your Italian connections, you're going to be the man to ask, I suppose, with Milan and their sort of form at the moment. We've got the return of David Beckham, of course, but specifically Milan. The trailing Inter at the top of Serie A by 8 points, I believe, but they do have a game in hand. I mean, how have they been this season, and is it going to be a really tough game for us?
I will be, and I'm honestly a bit worried, to be perfectly honest. The way Milan play, they play quite a possession-oriented game, which we know about, like when we played them a few years ago. They started off the season quite bad. Like, they weren't playing well, they were sort of struggling to get results. Leonardo was under a bit of pressure, and there was a point in the Champions League where they got beat off Zurich 1-0 at home. And that was that put a lot of pressure on Leonardo in the Milan and the Milan bench, basically. But they went on a run, and like, they're unbeaten for something like, I think it was about 11 games, something like that. A fantastic run, beat Real Madrid. They got beat last weekend against Palermo Didn't play this weekend due to snow. But the way that he's got them playing, we've got the four at the back, the wing backs, full backs are absolutely rubbish. Zambrotta has passed it, Jankulowski has passed it, Antonini isn't good enough, Abate isn't good enough, Odo is not a football player.
Bit harsh. Just to interrupt, Dov, I mean, I think that we've got to test Dira if he plays, because I think he's...
Dira's been fantastic since he's came in.
Yeah, but I just think that... I think if you put him under tremendous pressure, I think he'll obviously buckle, but...
The way they play is they play more. It's not really... It's like they set up their defence and then they set up their attack and they've not really got much of a midfield. They're playing usually... At the minute, they're playing Ambrosini and Pirlo as two midfielders. With like Seedorf as an attacking mid, Ronaldinho on the left, Pato on the right, and Borriello up front as a target man. So they're basically playing like 5-5 in a sense.
I think like individually, I mean, we should come out on top with the players that we've got if everyone's fit. Because you mentioned Borriello there, and I don't think he's anything to worry about really. Ronaldinho, obviously, still a decent player, can do anything on his day. Seedorf's quality. But, you know, the midfield, like you say, Ambrosini, I never really rated him in the first place. Pirlo, I'm a massive fan of Andrea Pirlo. But I think that, you know, he's getting on a bit now, isn't he? I don't think he's got as much energy as what he used to. Now, obviously, set pieces is a danger. But, I mean, you know, Steve, you're asking us about who you think will go through. I mean, I think United. It's a favourable draw. I mean, I'm not too overconfident, but I think that I'd rather have had AC Milan than some of the other teams in the pot.
And, Dov, what about the return of David Beckham?
Be great. I can't wait. It's going to be absolutely amazing to see Dave back at home. I just want to see what obviously he's going to get a great reception. I think there's no doubt about that. He's going to get a fantastic reception. But just good time. This is the first time he's been back at Old Trafford as a player.
Well, it's certainly going to be an intriguing tie. And the first leg is the 16th of February away in Milan. So do mark that down on your calendars.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Let's move on now to look at Loan Watch. We haven't done it for quite a while now. I think it was beginning of November we last checked out some of the United loanees. So we'll do that briefly now. Dov's going to help out, but I'll start by looking at a few players in the Championship. We'll start with Danny Simpson. He's obviously at Newcastle. He started 5 of their last 6 games since our last Loan Watch. Only one game he's missed, and I think he was effectively rested in that one, which was on the 12th of December. He was left on the bench and wasn't injured, so assuming he was just rested. Newcastle have won all 5 games that Simpson did play in, and they currently sit top of the Championship too, 10 points ahead of West Brom, who are in second with a game in hand. So everything's going well for Danny Simpson at Newcastle.
Just to interrupt you, Steve. I mean, Danny Simpson, can we not bring him back?
I assume United could call him back. You would think they would have put a clause in his sort of loan contract to say that we'd want him back if need be. But yeah, I'm surprised that hasn't been approached. If that is the case, maybe it isn't.
Then we could put Simpson at right back and put Fletcher back in the middle then, and just make it a little bit easier. But anyway, carry on. Sorry.
No worries. We'll move on to look at the two Watford lads now, Tom Cleverley and Craig Cathcart. It's been a pretty dismal month for Watford all in all since the last time we did Loan Watch. They've lost 4 of their last 6 games and sit 13th in the Championship as a result. Cleverley has started the last 6 games, however, and he did pick up 1 goal and 2 assists. So he's not quite been as prolific as he has been in the past for Watford, but still a goal and 2 assists, that's not a bad return from 6 games. Cathcart, on the other hand, he's been doing all right at Watford, and he has been playing quite regularly, but he was injured at half-time during Watford's 3-1 win over QPR. To be honest, he's made a couple of errors while he's been there, and most recently that was against Newcastle when Watford lost 2-0. He sort of mishit a back pass towards goalkeeper Scott Loach, and Peter Lovenkranz nipped in to score. Not too great for Cathcart, but at least he's getting games, he's starting, and he's getting some good first-team experience, so that's all good. Now, before I move over to Dov, Rodrigo Possebon, there's so many question marks surrounding what's going on with him. I believe he still is with FC Braga in the Portuguese league, but we've done a bit of research and seen that he hasn't been playing at all in the first team since... I don't know when. I think he played 1 Europa League qualifier at the start of the season, but since then he's really not been involved. But my Portuguese isn't very good, but I've looked at some sort of translation, and I believe he may be injured at the moment, and that could be why he's he's not been involved recently. But we'll try and look into that in a bit more detail, ready for next time, and really get the sort of lowdown on really what is happening with Rodrigo Possibon. Dov, I'll invite you now to bring in and bring us up to date with some of the other players out on loan.
Yeah, mine is nowhere near as in-depth as yours, Steve. I've got four players to tell everybody about. I've got Tom Heaton at QPR. He's not played, and he's not even been on the bench for QPR. So I know he was on the bench at the start of the season. He played a couple of games in the Carling Cup as well, but it seems that he's not even getting there anymore. Second player is Danny Drinkwater, who has been on loan at Huddersfield, and he's not actually played since the start of November, but it's not his fault. He's been injured, he's had a thigh injury, so we can let him off with that, but he's back in light training and should be playing pretty soon as well. Also, we've had David Gray, not the famous singer, our own David Gray. He's been on loan at Plymouth. He's played three games in the last sort of month or so, and lost them all. In the game against Swansea that Plymouth played, they got beat 1-0 in every game, but the Swansea game he played, he actually got subbed after an hour, wasn't very effective. He's been getting games but not been playing very well, but I mean that can hardly be his fault because Plymouth are pretty dire. But I have one success story to let everybody know about. It's Fabian Brandy, who's been on loan at Gillingham. He's been in and out of the team, but when he's played, he's been fantastic. He's been so good. He's been fantastic. He played against Oldham in a 1-0 win, and he won the penalty that decided the game. Basically, got brought down by Oldham's Sean Gregan. Then Gillingham won that 1-0. He also played against Burton Albion in the FA Cup second round. Basically, it was Fabian Brandy presented the chance to Curtis Weston, who sort of slotted the ball in. And then he also played in Gillingham's 3-1 winner over Stockport, where he scored a fantastic solo effort in that game as well. So he's been scoring goals, setting up goals, and he's really become a key figure for Gillingham. So that's certainly a successful loan spell for Fabian there.
Fantastic stuff. Thanks a lot for that, Dov. And next week, we definitely have Mr. Mujak from the redcafe.net forums lined up. So going to talk to him about a few of the loan players. We'll talk to him about Adam Lajic as well, the deal that fell through, his views on that, and also the performances of the reserves and youth team. Now, Dov, usually it would be reserves review, but no game this week, so we'll move on to other regular features, Cabbage and Player of the Week. Dan, let's bring you back in. Cabbage of the Week, plenty to choose from after the dismal performance against Fulham, so who's it going to be for you?
I'm going to go with Anderson. I thought he was poor against Fulham. I thought he didn't have any impact on the game whatsoever. Didn't tackle, didn't track back much. And I just think he was a bit poor, really, and he needs to start. He's going the same way as Nani, and I don't like that. So I think he's going to be a top-class player, but he needs to start showing it.
I'm going to give it to Paul Scholes this week. A little bit harsh considering he played quite well against Wolves, but even in that game, he wasn't really involved in the goals or anything like that. Just sort of went through the game unnoticed, really. But then against Fulham, had a bit of a mare, as we talked about earlier. Gave the ball away for Murphy's goal and generally wasn't on his game at all. So, Paul Scholes for me this week. Dov?
I'm going to just agree with you, Steve. I thought Scholes was absolutely horrendous. Tried to look for somebody else to mix up a little bit, but couldn't look past the Ginger Ninja. He was absolutely terrible. That's probably one of his worst performances I've ever seen him play. He was that bad.
Okay, and Player of the Week now. Dov, start with you this time.
I might need to go back to the Wolves game. I might need to give Gibble some credit. Yeah, go on. I'll be nice.
Okay, Dan?
Surprisingly, I'm going to go with Thomas Kujak. I know he let in 3 goals on Saturday, but I mean, he played decent. Yeah, I know he dropped that ball against Wolves, but I mean, he made a great few saves against Fulham. So I think, yeah, Kujak.
Yep, I'm following you there, Dan, giving it to Thomas Kujak. Like you say, made a few decent saves against Fulham, and it could have been a lot worse than 3-0 if it wasn't for Kujak. Did make some really key saves, and against Wolves, like you say, dropped the ball that time. But
I could have guessed that, Steve, with the snowman that he made on him. Everybody's been looking at it. It's on the Facebook group if you've not seen it, but Steve, the lovely snowman there, it's pretty good. A fitting tribute, I think.
Dov, it's Legends profile time now, I guess. No reserves review, so who have you got for your legend?
Well, this week, Steve, we have the Legends legend. I've been skirting around some old players, some really good players, some players of note, but I've got to go for an absolute genius. So this week, Steve, I have Duncan Edwards. He's the legend that we're going to do this week. Well, everybody, Duncan Edwards, he was born in Dudley on the 1st of October, 1936. And I'm going to begin with this one with a quote. I usually end, but I'm going to begin this one with a quote as well. Sir Martin Busby, he says, Duncan had everything. He was big, strong, confident, and still young. Right from the start, we gave up trying to spot flaws in his game. John Charles was another player, a giant, a great, with great skill. But as a player, John didn't even have as much as Duncan. He used to move upfield, brushing people aside to lash in late goals when we needed them. And to put that in context, John Charles was voted Juventus' greatest ever foreign player, ahead of players like Platini and Zidane, players like that. So that's how good Duncan Edward was before I get into it. He started off playing sort of schoolboy football, obviously, with his school team. And he was also a Keane Morris dancer. The reason I'm saying this is because he was actually asked to compete in the National Morris and Sword Dancing Festival or go to the England Under-14 Football Association Trials. He chose the latter, which is probably fairly obvious. He began his career with various Dudley sort of schoolboy sides and such like, but we picked him up. He became quite integral to our youth side. He actually won the first ever Youth Cup in 1953 as well. And he was also the youngest ever player to play in the top division at 16 years and 185 days. Played against Cardiff City, and we did lose 4-1. There's a review of his performance. There's not much footage of him, but the review of his performance in the Manchester Guardian says he showed promise, fine ability in passing and shooting, but will have to move faster as a wing half. At this point, he was still playing in sort of with the youth sides and stuff like that. But so in the following seasons, he began to emerge more as a first team player. His style of play, he's mainly known as a defensive midfielder, but his style of play meant he could pretty much play anywhere. He could operate on the wings. He plays a striker. Even played in central defence. His biggest asset was his physical strength. He was quite authoritative on the pitch, and obviously was so young as well. Stanley Matthews, who everybody knows are a fantastic football player as well, he said he was like a rock in a raging sea, and Bobby Moore, the great England centre half, called him the Rock of Gibraltar. And he also said that he was dynamic when coming forward as well. He had a couple of nicknames. He was called Big Dunk, which was quite obvious, and the Tank. And some people have said he's one of the toughest players that has ever been. He also had great timing in his tackles as well, fantastic agility, and was great with both feet. His long range shots as well, Bobby Charlton-esque. And he actually scored a goal for England in 1956 against West Germany. And after that goal, he was nicknamed Boom Boom by local press or Big Bertha because of that shot. So goes to show the kind of style of play that he had. It was a member of that fateful Busby Babes side, and unfortunately, he was one of the players who actually lost their lives in Munich at such a young age as well. He could have went on to basically do so much more for us. He played 177 games, scored 21 goals. He only had 18 caps for England, scored 5 goals in that as well. But he could have went and been arguably the greatest player that we have ever had, and England have ever produced. At his funeral, 5,000 people lined the streets of Dudley, which was a magnificent amount of people as well. And Jimmy Murphy, who was the United assistant, he said at the funeral, he says, "I shut my eyes, now I can see him. The pants hitched up, the wild leaps of boyish enthusiasm as he came running up the tunnel, the tremendous power of his tackling, always fair but fearsome, his immense power on the ball, the greatest. There was only one, and that was Duncan Edwards." And I thought this is quite poignant as well. I mean, he was a great player, but on his headstone, it reads, "A day of memory, sad to recall. Without farewell, he left us all." He died at the age of 21. He was a fantastic player, a member of the Busby Babes side, possibly the best player in that Busby Babe size. And it's also worth mentioning that recently passed away has been Albert Scanlon as well. He will be profiled next week, so we'll have an Albert Scanlon Legends profile next week. But Duncan Edwards, a fine player, and possibly one of the greatest players that we've ever had at our club. So he is a legend by all means.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
Right, it's emails time now on the redcafe.net podcast. We've only got a few to get through, so here we go. We've got Nathan Hornsby sent in two emails. Firstly, guys, he'd like to know sort of who would be your choices at both right back and left midfield. I mean, if injuries and suspension weren't in the equation. Dan, I'll start with you for both those positions. Who would be your sort of ideal choices?
I think Wes Brown, for me. I mean, I know Bob likes John O'Shea, but I think Wes Brown offers a little bit more. And obviously, he was there when we won the Champions League, played all that season, and he was fantastic. So I'd go with Wes Brown. Left midfield, that's a tough one. I don't really know who our strongest left midfielder is at the moment. I don't expect Giggs to play there much. Nani's obviously got talent, but just nothing else. I struggle for a left winger. I think that's what we really need to do, if not in January, especially in the summer, to get a left winger.
And Dov, what about yourself? I guess John O'Shea would be your pick at right back.
Would indeed, John O'Shea, what a player. And left wing, I'd be going to be controversial actually. I would play Nani at left wing because I think given a run of games, he could be really effective there for us. I just think he needs a run of games and not a constant knock on a confidence, but I think this time at Old Trafford could well be up.
Okay, well, Nathan also emailed in and said his cabbage for this week would have been Sir Alex Ferguson for his choice of formation, really, the 3-5-2 system. And our final email is from Safi and Ben Zaire. He emailed in regarding the Champions League tie against AC Milan, just sort of asking our opinions on that. So we've already discussed that earlier on in the show, but he says he expects, as well as us, a really tough couple of games. But like he says, you don't really know what to expect from a Milan side. They can either be brilliant or average, so hopefully we'll get them on an average couple of days.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast.
Well, everybody, it is preview time, and I am delighted to be joined by Hull City fan Paul Cockerdin, who has a Hull City blog. It's called The 3 o'clock at Kempton, and that's the web address for that is www.thekempton.com. So, Paul, welcome to the redcafe.net podcast. How are you doing?
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm great, thank you. Bit cold.
It is very cold. Has there been a lot of snow around your way?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all over the north, isn't it? Yeah, and even down south.
Yeah, I struggled to go to work today. That's how bad it was. But we're not here to talk about the weather. This isn't the Red Cafe Weather Podcast. We're here to talk about some exciting fixture at the weekend. It's United against Hull. But before we talk about that, I actually just want to ask you about the name of your blog, The 3 o'clock at Kempton. Can you sort of just tell us why you've called it that?
Right, OK. Well, the Kempton in our old ground, Boothby Park, was the big stand like Liverpool's Kop or your Stretford end. And obviously it shares the same name as the race course. And obviously in those days it all kicked off at 3 o'clock. So 3 o'clock at Kempton was where we all were every fortnight. Obviously those days are long gone, and this game has obviously been moved to a Sunday at 4 o'clock. That's just the way it is now, football, isn't it?
That's what we're used to. That we don't get Saturday 3 o'clock kickoffs very often. But yeah, we'll talk about the game. We'll talk about your season first before we talk about the game. Actually, you've had not the best season, shall we say. You're currently sitting 17th, point above Bolton, and in 2009 you're sort of struggling to win games. I mean, do you feel you've maybe turned a corner this season, or how do you feel the season's gone as a whole?
We've had our moments when Bullard came back and we had a few good wins. Other than that, we've ground out a few unconvincing wins against the likes of Wigan and Bolton and Stoke. But other than that, we've not really had the highs that we had last season. Obviously, we went to Old Trafford and lost 4-3. We won at Arsenal last year. We drew at Liverpool and won at Spurs. We've just not had those highs. But on the other hand, we have picked up some wins against the teams that you do need to win against, the teams at the bottom. So it's been a different type of season. It's been a more grounded season this year. Not the kind of amazing start to last season, but at least we turned the corner. At the end of last season, we were terrible, and now we are competing, and you know, we go into games thinking we could win, whereas towards the end of last year it was just defeat after defeat after defeat. So mixed season really, but can't expect much more than in and around the relegation zone, unfortunately. Let's just hope we can pick up enough points to stay up again.
Yeah, well, it must have been quite depressing, sort of the tail end of last season, where you were getting defeat after defeat, but you managed to stay up, which essentially is the name of the game when you just get promoted. What are your opinions on Phil Brown as a manager? Because I know, well, he's been getting a lot of criticism, and there was talk of him actually losing his job when he's got taken over. But I think after Jimmy Boulard and his light-hearted antics sort of possibly even saved his job. I mean, what is your opinion of him as a manager, and do you think he's the man for Hull?
Yeah, well, Bullard certainly lifted the mood, didn't he, with some good performances and that great celebration at Eastlands. But yeah, I mean, Phil Brown deserves a little bit of credit himself. I mean, I think the stick that he got this season was understandable. We had a terrible end to last season, and we weren't playing very well this season, and the new chairman's come in. And so, however it's happened, Phil Brown's played a more positive style of football, and you know, we're attacking a bit more. Even though Bullard is now injured and he'll miss the Manchester United game, they are still trying to attack a little bit more. Whereas earlier on in the season and towards the end of last season, it was very negative football, and we just can't do that negative football as well as the likes of Stoke and Bolton and Blackburn, who've been doing it a long time, can do. So the best chance really is to have a go at teams. We had a go at Arsenal at the weekend. It didn't come off, but after an hour it was 1-0 to them, and we got a penalty, and if that had gone in, you never know. You never know what would have happened. So as long as he keeps trying to attack and try and win games, I think people will be happy. I think if you look at Manchester United this year as well, although they've lost more games, because you're winning more, you know, you're winning more than drawing, then it doesn't really matter. You know, obviously the 3 points for a win is crucial, and it does pay to go out and attack and try and get the 3 points rather than try and close it down for a point. So I think he's come back from the brink, and he's earned himself certainly a few more games. I wouldn't say his future's safe, but I think people are quite happy for Phil Brown to stick around and, you know, see what happens in the January transfer window.
That's really interesting to see who he brings in. Out of the players you've got at the minute, who would you say is your sort of most threatening player and player that would probably give us most problems come Sunday at 4?
Well, I keep saying every week that Giovanni, obviously the Brazilian player, is due a big game. He had a decent game at Old Trafford last year, but and he had a good start to this season, but last few weeks he's been, you know, he's been very anonymous, so that's been concerning. He's due a big game. Maybe the Manchester United game will be the one. Other than that, it's Stephen Hunt, who's looked very good recently. He takes a lot of the corners and a lot of the free kicks as well. He's always involved in everything, and, you know, good at crossings. He scored a few goals as well. He's had a few poor games, but in the big games like Arsenal, Chelsea, already this season, he has raised his game. So he'll be playing on the left wing on Sunday. If he doesn't get much joy there, he might switch to the other wing. So obviously with Manchester United's defensive problems, you know, injury-wise, he might get something there. Probably the best player this season, though, has been Anthony Gardner, the former Spurs defender, and got a cap for England. He's looked good this season. If he can stay fit, he might be very crucial to us.
Well, that'll be interesting stuff to see if he can take advantage of the defensive problems we have. But ask you a hypothetical question. Per se, say Hull come into a lot of money and you can buy any Manchester United player we have. Money is no object. Which player would you take and why?
Well, I mean, to be honest, you could have probably certainly the first and second team of Manchester United. You'd probably go down to the third team of Manchester United, be as good as, if not better than, most of our squad, really. I don't mean to be disparaging about our players, but obviously there's a lot of young players coming through the ranks. I would actually, I mean, obviously there's some star players in there, but, you know, I would like to take a punt on one of the young strikers. We obviously, we got to the Premier League for a large part through getting Fraser Campbell on loan when he was from Manchester United, and he did a sterling job, got about a dozen goals in the last half of the season to fire us into the Premier League, and obviously we've moved on since. But maybe someone like Macheda or Welbeck might be the person. I know you're saying money's no object, and you'd look to Rooney or someone like that. But I do fancy you know, taking a young player on like that, maybe on loan, and giving him a chance, giving him a, you know, a 10-15 game run in the season, and see how it progresses. We've obviously struggling for goals as well, so I think Phil Brown will be looking in the transfer market in January, probably in the loan market due to the finances in the Premier League, and specifically at Hull. So maybe that maybe he'll be ringing up Alex Ferguson to do something like that.
That would be very interesting indeed to get a nice one of the youth players getting some first team football. Well, we're nearly up for time, but we've got one more question for you. A prediction for the weekend. Do you think you could do a Fulham? What do you think the score will be at the weekend, Paul?
I think it's going to be a good game. I honestly do. Like I say, I think Man United are coming out to win games nowadays. I think Hull at home have got to win their games, and probably won't have as much fear of Manchester United as teams have in the current situation with the injury. So I think we'll give it a good go. I could see it being a high-scoring game, but maybe 2-1 to United, or maybe 3-1 to United. I just don't think we're quite solid enough to keep it up for 90 minutes. But I think we'll give it a good go. I think it'll be a, you know, good atmosphere at the ground, and obviously it's on TV, so I think it'll be one to watch. You know, it might not excite the Man United fans too much, seeing the likes of Hull City, but we've got some exciting players, and you know, with the crowd behind them, I think it will be a good game. But obviously, United don't lose that many games, and coming off the back of the Fulham result, I think they'll be really fired up and wanting to prove a few of the doubters wrong. So I'll say 2-1 for United.
I would like that to be the score, certainly, Paul. But, well, our time is up. But thank you very much for coming on the podcast. It's been a pleasure. Thanks very much for coming on the show, Paul.
Thanks a lot.
Well, that was the views of the Hull City fan, Paul, from 3 o'clock at the Kempton. Guys, what about ourselves? Dan, tough game, isn't it? Hull City away. I know on paper that they haven't been playing very well in the Premier League of late, but how's Sir Alex going to be able to lift morale, considering our defence is so shaky at the moment? How's he going to be able to get the players really up for this game?
Well, I've seen pictures of the Christmas party, so I think the morale's fairly high. I don't know if you've seen them lads, but I've had a little look at them. I think we need to win this game, really, just to keep the pressure on Chelsea, because it's weird, really. I mean, no team seems to want to win the league. Ourselves don't seem in the form to do it. Chelsea have been dropping points as well, so I think a good solid victory against Hull and we'll be fine. But I mean, we've just got to sort of defensive woes out, really, and we'll be okay.
Dob, do you think sort of the fact that Chelsea and Arsenal are both playing before we play? I mean, obviously Chelsea can move further ahead. Arsenal, they can go above us if they win. So that would put us in third place by the time we play. Will that put added pressure on us?
I don't think so. I think Sir Alex has been around for a long time. The team's got plenty of experience in it as well. To realise that that's not really a factor. To realise what they need to do is to go out and get 3 points. That we cannot afford any more slip-ups. I don't really see where the solidity at the back's going to come from. As far as I'm aware, nobody's ready to come back. So, I don't know, we might have two at the back. You might experiment again. But, I don't know. I say Dan was being very pessimistic last week. I'm going to be very pessimistic this week, and I don't think we'll win. I think we'll draw that game.
Dan, do you agree with that? They haven't won in four, Carl. You mentioned that you expect us to go there and win, so surely we can put together a performance. I know we've got so many problems at the back, but if the likes of Rooney, Giggs, Scholes, Valencia, if they turn up and put in a performance, then we can win this game.
If we keep the ball, we'll be all right. But, you know, we need to put the players in midfield to be able to keep the ball. That's the problem, because then players are at the back. I'd hope that we could win. I don't think I'd take a draw. I want a win. whether we'll get it or not is a different matter.
It's quite amazing to think, really, when cast your mind back to last season, this game was a dead rubber, wasn't it? We were able to play our reserve team in effect, and we still got 3 points. I doubt that'll be happening on the weekend, but yeah, it's I think it's still going to be a pretty difficult hurdle to negotiate, really. I know they're not in a very good run of form, haven't won in four, not playing very good football either, but then again, you never know in these sort of games. All it takes is for a couple of our players to have a bad game and we could be on the end of a shot, but pretty sure the lads will put in a good performance and we should, fingers crossed, come away with a 3 point. That's just about the end of the redcafe.net podcast for, could be for the year. Will it be for the year?
I don't think
next
so.
Monday? No?
I think we can squeeze another one in, just.
Well, that does leave me to say a Merry Christmas from all of us at the redcafe.net podcast. Do send questions, feedback and any comments you might have to podcast@redcafe.net. Check out my Thomas Cushack Snowman on the Facebook group too and get signed up if you haven't already. Well, thanks a lot for listening for another week, and we'll see you again next week.